Winchester Talking Newspaper, Friday the 8th of December, 2023. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And this phone number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. If there's a problem with your Sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. Now, the main headlines this week are: accident and emergency put at risk in new hospital plan, more than 350 objections to plans for army base, and National Trust visitors enjoy a first taste of Christmas. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please? Heather!
A&E put at risk in new hospital plan. Current facilities would be downgraded. By Chris Atkinson. Strong concerns have been raised about new plans to close the A&E department at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. The plan, revealed last week, will see the department downgraded when a new specialist hospital is built in Basingstoke, either on the site of the North Hampshire Hospital or the preferred option near Junction 7 of the M3 at Dummer. In Winchester, a 24/7 nurse-led urgent treatment centre would be opened, dealing with more minor injuries. Patients with life-threatening conditions would go to either Basingstoke or Southampton. The maternity unit, Florence Portal House, will also be downgraded, becoming midwifery rather than consultant-led. The new Basingstoke Hospital would have an A&E unit, trauma unit, consultant-led maternity unit, and specialise in heart attacks and stroke treatments. This new hospital is due to open in around 2032. Councillor Martin Todd, the leader of Winchester City Council, said he was worried. At a full meeting of the council, he said, "Like many local residents, some of what's being reported leaves me really concerned. If all we get is the headline of closing A&E, that's not acceptable." The statement that's been issued says that Winchester will get 24/7 urgent treatment and a same-day emergency care service. But it's not saying what that means. Councillor Todd confirmed that the Health and Environment Policy Committee will hold a meeting at the end of January to consider the details of the proposal, with a presentation from the hospital team. Liz Jarvis, Liberal Democrat parliamentary candidate for Eastleigh, has also said that she is hugely concerned at proposals to close the A&E department. She said, "We cannot have a situation where people are unable to access the emergency care they need, or having to travel miles and wait even longer for treatment, or where our local NHS services are put under even more strain by the closure of the A&E department at the RHCH." Steve Brine, MP for Winchester and Chandos Ford, said, "Winchester is a fast-growing city, and I want to see A&E services maintained as they are today, plus full consultant-led maternity services on the RHCH site. If the clinicians who must ultimately decide feel things can be changed in a way that provides safe and sustainable services for my constituents, it's up to them to make the clinical case." Flick Drummond, the MP for Meon Valley, was more enthusiastic about the news, saying that RHCH is not fit for purpose. She continued, "Gone are the days when small or medium-sized towns or cities could have a district general hospital able to take good care in all disciplines. The sheer complexity of what can be done today needs purpose-built centres of excellence, able to treat people with the best equipment in the best surroundings." Commenting on the Hampshire Chronicle Facebook page, Louise Bridger asked, "And how are those without transport supposed to get to Basingstoke in an emergency? I mean, no one can even rely on the ambulance service anymore." Laura Whiteear commented, "Basingstoke will not be able to cope." And she continued, "Those that decide these things need to spend time in the departments instead of behind a desk."
Let's have the second headline story, please, Noel.
Yes, more than 350 objections to plans for Army base by Toby Oliver. The major development scheme for a former army base on the outskirts of Winchester has sparked more than 350 objections. The Bushfield Camp scheme proposes a business park, academic accommodation with 525 beds, a 100-bed hotel, and 1,055 parking spaces in a multi-storey car park. More than half the site would be retained as chalk downland open space. Excuse me. Objections have been flooding in, with 356 submitted to Winchester City Council by the end of last week. A total of 10 supporting comments have also been submitted, with 3 marked as neutral. Robert Hardman of Harvest Close, Badger Farm, said, "The Church Commission need to be leading by example rather than allowing this rewilded haven for wildlife to be bulldozed for a development that will only increase their carbon footprint. In recent times, it has become apparent that we urgently need to reverse global warming, and the church of all people need to put a halt to this scheme immediately. We all need to be thinking green, not greed." Patrick Robbins of Maytree Close Badger Farm said, "It's a beautiful area with stunning views. I've always felt blessed to have such green spaces so close to my house. The proposal seemed bizarre. Surely we don't need a hotel there, or more student accommodation. How is that going to benefit local residents?" Barbara Cooper of Techdown Mead said, "This beautiful piece of land is well used by walkers and dog walkers. The loss of wildlife will be devastating, and we can't afford to lose any more wildlife here. The Church of England should be looking after our heritage, not destroying it. This is pure greed, and as a church, they should be ashamed of themselves." Supporter Thomas Ruddle of Falcon View Badger Farm said, "I feel that Legal and General have started the ball rolling well in terms of balancing the needs of the local economy with the local wildlife. I personally have to travel quite far for work, and more job opportunities basically on my doorstep would be greatly appreciated. I also note the increased bus public transport options." Dr. Helen Roberts of Sunnydown Road, Oliver's Battery, said, "The proposed employment, education and leisure facilities in this part of the city would be a welcome addition. To view the application online, search 23/02507/02507/out on Winchester City Council's planning portal."
OK, Jane, let's have the third headline story, please.
Which is a lovely, positive article on the National Trust visitors enjoy a first taste. Visitors to National Trust sites around Hampshire have enjoyed their first taste of Christmas now that the Heritage Charity has opened its doors for the festive season. Staff and volunteers at Mottisfont, Hinton Ampner, The Vine, Mompesson House and Uppark have been busy behind the scenes for weeks. Mottisfont. At Mottisfont near Romsey, more than 3,000 people collected train tickets on their arrival to the journey to the North Pole on Mottisfont's Christmas Express. Highlights included the Polar Bear's Ball, featuring a life-size polar bear, a winter forest scene, and spectacular lighting effects, culminating with a Northern Lights display. In the gardens, families discovered hidden doors inside postboxes, stone urns and barrels revealing beautiful miniature scenes, revealing the secrets behind Santa's Christmas postal service. Children wearing elf hats queued up to try out the Christmas post bag stuffing challenge, then had a go at designing their own Christmas stockings. Hinton Ampner. Hintonhampton near Alresford welcomed more than 2,000 visitors to its retelling of J.M. Barrie's Peter Pan, with a festive twist. The entrance hall had become the nursery for the Darling family children, and the dining room was transformed into Captain Hook's treasure trove. Highlights included Peter Pan's flying shadow flitting across a room, and especially for younger visitors, a life-size ticking crocodile. Visitor experience manager Michaela Saunders Hall said, "Partnering with Great Ormond Street Children's Hospital has made the experience even more special." The Vine. The Nutcracker sprang to life at the Vine near Basingstoke. Visitors flocked to take in the sight of the colourful battle scene between the villainous Mouse King and the heroic Nutcracker Cavalry. Sweet thrones were a hit with visitors keen to capture fun photographic memories in the land of sweets. And Maupassant House in Salisbury, Cathedral Close, recreated Charles Dickens's famous tale, A Christmas Carol, with nearly 1,000 visitors in its first few days of opening. The house revealed settings from Dickens' own world as well as from his novel. Visitors could pop into the writer's study, and for the first Christmas, the upstairs rooms were open as well as the ground floor. And this is accompanied by some delightful photos. There's a photo of a little boy gently stroking a polar bear at Mottisfont. And then there's a very scary life-size crocodile with a ticking clock in its hand, in its mouth, which is at Hintonhampton. And a lovely smiling mother and daughter, both in elf hats, doing a little drawing. And finally, a most delicious-looking meal inside one of the National Trust buildings, which I do recognise, with a Christmas tree and presents all around the bottom and candles everywhere, and the most wonderful-looking delights on a Christmas table, mince pies and a wonderful cake and all sorts of things which are making me feel really rather hungry.
Thank you. And that concludes the headline stories. Now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, and then we'll have Belgarum Diary, first person, a letter from Westminster, an editorial comment, and we'll end with items of general news. I'll start with the death notices. Doherty. Michael Mick Doherty, at home, aged 71. Edwards, Christine Edwards, at Brackenley Residential Home, Winchester, aged 95. Cousins, Ronald William Cousins, who was a flight lieutenant and had the DFC, peacefully at home, aged 102 years. Holmes, Eileen Ann Holmes, at home in Clanfield, aged 84. Knight, the Very Reverend Dr. Alec Knight, and he was OBE and K St J. And Pritchard, Rose, June Rose Pritchard, peacefully aged 94. Macon, Lieutenant Colonel John Dillon Macon, peacefully at Abbott's Barton Care Home, aged 92. Mitchell, David Mitchell, peacefully, aged 84. And finally, Pollock Gore, William Duncan Joseph Pollock Gore, peacefully in his sleep, aged 96. And now it's over to Heather, because she's got a Christian comment.
Thank you, Roy. Light up a life, writes Nigel Hemming, the senior pastor of Winchester Vineyard Church. I had the privilege of taking part in Winchester Hospice's wonderful Light Up a Life remembrance service this week. It was a special evening as families, staff and the wider hospice community came together to share memories, support one another and celebrate life. I was there with the Winchester Sings Community Choir, who had the privilege of performing a couple of songs for entertainment and reflection. Hospices play a vital role in providing specialist palliative care at the end of life, And though Winchester Hospice has only been fully open for a couple of years, it is already making a massive difference, supporting families across this area. The enormous effort to raise the initial funds and generate wide community interest over the last few years has been followed up by a dedicated team who continue to drive forward the charity fundraising. Before COVID, our choir got involved by simply raising money through busking and hosting quiz nights. But like many other community groups, we've stayed in touch because this work connects deeply to so many of us. Back in October, as part of the Purple Night Walk, we stood in the pitch black of the water meadows, waiting for torchlights to emerge from the woods to cheer on 200 walkers with a rousing rendition of Dancing in the Moonlight. Even the cows joined in. Finding the most appropriate music and words for an occasion like the Remembrance Service can be a challenge. All of us have experienced the power of music and words to help express emotion. We wanted to judge the mood right with the songs we chose, to complement the well-known carols and the sensitive and thoughtful prayers provided by the Christ Church team. We were looking for a song that would reflect the loss of people close to us, alongside the celebration and memories of those we love so dearly. It struck me that the phrase "Light Up a Life" was itself a strong title for a song, and surely someone had already written it. The phrase is used by hospices everywhere to remember and celebrate. I searched the internet but found nothing, so I tentatively set out to try and write an original song which we could share on the evening. I tried a draft with the choir, and cautiously they went for it. The final version came together just 1 week before, and the choir members suggesting alternative lyrics and settling it with a vote. Judging by the feedback, it seemed to strike a chord, and you can watch the live stream by heading to Christ Church Winchester's YouTube channel. For all those who will be remembering a loved one this Christmas, I wish you the love and peace of God in the sadness as well as the joy and celebration of wonderful treasured memories. And then there's a quote from the lyrics, which is, "Light up a life as we celebrate the good times. Light up a life and remember love we shared. Light up a flame, burn brightly through the darkness. Light up our hearts, we know you're always there." And those lyrics have been, what's it called, with a C?
Copyrighted.
Nigel Hemming, Senior Pastor, Winchester Vineyard Church.
Thank you. And we'll continue with the letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. There are 8 letters this week, and Noel will start.
Yes, Elizabeth Proudman writes about what she calls a misguided plan for Austin's statue, and the letter is accompanied by 2 pictures, one of Jane Austen standing by her table and the other of Jane Austen sitting by her table and actually writing. The misguided plan for Austen's statue. I'm sorry to see that the misguided plan to erect a statue to Jane Austen at Winchester Cathedral Close has been resurrected, Chronicle, November the 30th. Most of the objections that were raised to the previous plan apply equally to the new project. In these difficult times, are there not better claims on our money? Jane Austen was not a Winchester person. She grew up in Steventon, did all her writing in Chawton, and only came to Winchester for the last few weeks of her tragically short life. Her best and most appropriate monument is her grave in Winchester Cathedral. There she can be remembered with respect. She is known to have been a modest woman who shunned publicity. None of her books were published in her name until after her death, and few people knew that she was a writer. She was far from the dominant character depicted in this statue. I object to having any statue in the close. This was the monastic precinct. Until quite recently, it was a sanctuary of peace in the busy city. Even with all the cars there today, it is still a place of wonder. This statue of Jane Austen is designed to attract yet more tourists here. The Close does not need more tourists. If a statue is needed, why do we not have Robert Truscott's delightful seated figure? This could be placed appropriately in the house in College Street, where she died, which I believe would be open to the public. Elizabeth Proudman, St John's Street, Winchester.
And now Andrew Beadle writes, Opaque NHS. The NHS in Hampshire has now published its proposals for the future of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, which would involve downgrading its A&E and maternity units. The proposal is that Winchester Hospital would continue to provide 24/7 urgent treatment, same-day emergency care service, and midwife-led maternity services. However, our MP Steve Brine has long said that as a fast-growing city, he believes A&E services should be maintained as at present, plus full consultant-led maternity services on the site. I believe the NHS has been less than transparent in what day-to-day differences their proposals would mean, and this needs to be vigorously challenged during the consultation process. Currently, we have an MP who has dedicated his time since being elected to speak up for the health needs of Winchester. But at the next general election, we shall have a new MP. What voters will want to know well before then is which candidate will best fill Steve's shoes in the area. And that's from Andrew Beadle, Milesdown Place, St Giles's Hill, Winchester.
And another letter about the Austen statue. Robert Hunt writes, you invite your readers to comment on the Jane Austen piece, yet your leader last week, November the 30th, shows a distinctly negative bias. In order for people to come to a more informed conclusion, they should be given the opportunity to see more images showing the sculpture in the round. I have had that opportunity and would make the following comments. Given that there is so much heated debate about how Jane Austen should be portrayed, any statue created in her memory can only be representational. For me, the pose and dress cleverly introduce subtle movement, which is not clear in the pictures you published, together with a magical stillness which immediately captures the attention of the viewer. And her dress does not have to be merely literal. It may also be symbolic, pointing to more intangible aspects of this author, namely her lively yet disciplined mind. As already reported, Martin Jennings has produced work throughout this country to which the public has responded with enormous favour and affection. In my opinion, and I am sure this is true among his many peers, he is recognised as one of this country's most accomplished sculptors. I would suggest that we will be very fortunate to have an example of his work in this historic city. Robert Hunt, MSPS, Honorary Secretary, the Society of Portrait Sculptors, Hyde Street, Hyde, Winchester.
And this is from Charles Baker. Guess what this one's about? Why does Winchester Cathedral want to erect a statue of Basingstoke's most famous daughter? Why not Queen Mary Tudor? She at least had a connection with the cathedral. That's Charles Baker, Piping Green, Coldham Common.
And Roy Perry writes, Hopes for Peace. Back in 2007, we became the inaugural co-chairman of the Hampshire Interfaith Network. Our aim was to improve understanding and knowledge between faith communities in our county. We are fortunate to live in a country where principles of tolerance and understanding are respected. We were uplifted to find in all the faith communities across Hampshire good people working not just for their own communities, but for the common good. In various capacities, we have both travelled in the Middle East and particularly to Israel and Palestine. We have witnessed the problems and difficulties of establishing a lasting peace there. However, we also spoke to people whose ancestors spoke of a shared Abrahamic history and centuries of living peacefully together before the modern-day strife. We therefore observe with horror the present situation in Gaza and more widely across Palestine and Israel. We understand this is in contravention of all religious teachings for the sanctity of human life, alleged violations of international humanitarian laws, and seemingly complete disregard of universal human dignities and values. The current terrorist outrages perpetrated by Hamas and the massive harsh reaction and the alleged war crimes of the Israeli Defense Forces do nothing to promote peace, tolerance and understanding. Indeed, quite the opposite. They offer no solution to an unacceptable situation facing innocent civilian life following the reported hundreds killed by Hamas in Israel and the thousands killed by the Israeli Defense Force in Palestine, in a region that has faced decades of hostility. Our fervent hope is that the initial short pause from hostilities can be renewed and ultimately must be maintained so that all sides can draw back from hate and bloodshed and be allowed to participate in the much harder task of finding a lasting, meaningful and peaceful solution that respects Jewish, Muslim and Christian communities equally. We have met and know there are many wise people of goodwill in the Israeli and Palestine communities. We share their determined hope that they will find a peaceful solution. And that was from Roy Perry, former leader of Hampshire County Council, and from Pirjada Qureshi, founding chair of the Winchester Muslim Cultural Association and solicitor advocate.
Confidence trick, writes Professor Robert Adam. The developers for the Sir John Moore Barracks have issued a typical nonsense community consultation, Chronicle November the 16th. While I won't go into every question, as they are all of the same type, when asked if you want to see a sustainable place to live, a distinctive place, or a walkable place with attractive routes, you are given a yes or no response. So who is likely to say they want an unsustainable, identikit place dominated by traffic and unattractive routes? And if they do, are they likely to be taken seriously? No doubt in due course we will all be told that the community have been consulted and they all agree with what they're planning to do, when in fact the survey is completely meaningless. When will these confidence tricks masquerading as consultation be called out for what they are? Professor Robert Adam, Crawley, Winchester.
And Judith Martin is writing about Bushfield Camp. Back in January this year, when the Bushfield development plans first came to light, it was a relatively modest affair. Wholly inappropriate, because essentially nothing should be built on such an important and sensitive site, but nevertheless a minnow compared to the Leviathan now proposed. Employment numbers expanded rapidly. I think at first they were 1,000, then 2,500, and now stand at 3,369, with parking for 1,055 cars. The rest, presumably, will come by bike or public transport. The park and ride site is across a dual carriageway. Nowhere does it say where these workers will live. Which the district's unemployment rate at the 2021 census was 2.3%. This is not some exercise to level up an economically deprived area with high unemployment figures. This is, as Winchester City Council makes clear, an outline application with no actual details of what anything will look like. So any pretty images of something more like a fully fledged small town are entirely make-believe. This is a speculative development, and such as on this site should not be given the time of day. Compare, then, the reaction to a small office development near Otterbourne, as reported on page 7 of this paper on November the 23rd. A planning officer is quoted as saying, "This is unchecked office development. It sets a strong precedent. We can't expose ourselves to speculative new builds." The councillors duly rejected it unanimously. Elsewhere in the same paper, page 10, Councillor Lerney is quoted as saying, "Re the building of council housing, far more necessary than you might think than building a speculative knowledge campus that we should be including references to the nature emergency and residents having access to nature and green space. How any of that could be squared with building on Bushfield defeats me. Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And J.A. Maguire writes, imagine fields lying fallow for 30 years, grass and wildflowers, insects of all kinds, hares and birds with skylarks making wonderful song as they ascend. A natural paradise. In 2023, it is now called Badger Farm. From a Wintonian born in the Brooks in 1941. J.A. Maguire, Waverley, Stanmore, Winchester.
And that was the last letter of Letters to the Editors for this week. Thank you to all of the contributors. And now Heather's going to read an alternative look at the news, because it's time for Belgarum Diary.
Pride and Haughtiness is the title of the first of the two pieces. There's a snapshot of an article published in the Times above what is written here. It's Anne Treneman's column about the hauntiness of the Chronicle in the Times on December the 2nd. And here we go. The Hampshire Chronicle responds. The Hampshire Chronicle has been called a number of things over the last 251 years, but haughty, it's probably a first. Anne Treneman, esteemed columnist with The Times, picked up on this newspaper's leader comment last week. We'd raised questions about the statue of Jane Austen that Winchester Cathedral proposes to install in the close to highlight its links with the Chawton-based novelist. She was buried in the cathedral in 1817 after spending her last days in a house in nearby College Street. The Chronicle highlighted the statue's windswept look, pointing out it would have been unlikely if Miss Austen was getting to her feet to receive guests at her home in Chawton. Oh, unless the house was particularly draughty. Miss Treneman says our sniffy views have a touch of hauntiness. Haughtiness, surely, adds the Chronicle editor, that seem very like Lady Catherine de Bourgh. Lady Catherine's the snooty character in Austen's most famous work, Pride and Prejudice, published in 1813. Perhaps it should be a truth universally acknowledged that the Times can't get over the fact that the Hampshire Chronicle was founded in 1772, some 13 years before the Times. They may be Johnny-come-lately, but hats off to the sub-editor who came up with the headline, Austen still waits for her plinth charming.
Oh dear.
And it's time for a member of the public to say what they think about the world in general, because it's time for first person. And this week it's by Khalid Aziz, and Noel's going to read it.
Yes. A little bit more than a member of the public, I think, Khalid Aziz. Anyway, it's a postcard from Colombia. Well, it's been a busy old year. Following a nephew's wedding in Brazil in the spring, we are now coming to the end of 3 weeks in Colombia, triggered by an invitation to the nuptials of the son of some close friends, who is marrying an exquisite young lady from this intriguing Central American state. I write from one of its Caribbean islands, Providencia. Founded in 1629 as an English Puritan colony, inevitably it was taken just 20 years later by the Spanish. Despite this, the local patois is more than English-based Creole, and they say they look more to England than to Spain. The island was all but wiped out by Hurricane Iota in 2020, but they're bouncing back. Back on the mainland, it seemed strange, sweltering in 30-plus degrees, and near 100% humidity, while Hampshire and the rest of the UK struggled with sub-zero temperatures. Bogota, the capital, is all you would expect of a modern metropolitan city. There are no more street sleepers and indigents than in most big cities, including London, and the city appears to thrive. Uber works well, and the taxis are thus safe and cheap. Of course, mention Colombia and the Western mind immediately thinks drugs. We certainly saw fewer signs of addiction than in most towns and cities in the UK, although we were chilled by the posters in every hotel announcing the establishment's opposition to child exploitation. Apparently sex tourism is an issue. Next to Medellin, which, like the locals, we learned to pronounce Medellin, our heads filled with narco images, courtesy of Netflix, we expected worse, but what we got was another thriving city full of high-rise buildings with no sign of the old Colombian marching powder. Then off to the boonies. Ecotourism is not as advanced as in the neighbouring's Costa Rica, where a short drive provides more fauna than an Attenborough documentary, but they are trying. Accommodation in the middle of the first generation rain and cloud forests is inevitably basic, but the necessities are there: hot water and, as throughout all of Colombia, broadband connectivity. Here, courtesy of Elon Musk's Starlink satellite system that puts Openreach to shame. Next to Cartagena, say Cartagena, a fortified seaport with most of its walls still intact, we stayed in a charmingly converted house in the heart of the old town, buzzing with atmosphere. Sunset drinks on the battlements started the countdown proper to the wedding. Back in Medellin, for the wedding itself, English mourning dress for the men and women resplendent in their finery. The Colombians are charm personified, hospitable and most appreciative of the efforts made by the 40 or so British connections who made the journey there to be there. The church, Catholic and relatively modern with delightful stained glass, was full. The bride, just a vision. The celebrant spoke his ecclesiastical words deliberately and slowly, so that even with a rudimentary Spanish, we were able to follow. It was more of a life lecture to the couple, with philosophy and religion thrown in instead of confetti. The congestion blew bubbles from kit kindly supplied by the ushers. Half a world away, it's hard to contemplate just how much is going on outside our own island. Travel broadens the mind, but it's also humbling. Even in inflation-racked Britain, we have so much going for us. Why focus so much on the negatives of life? Yesterday, we took a boat trip around Providencia. Pausing at the island's capital, we met some fishermen. They'd caught a grouper, and one of them was deftly wielding a machete to prepare the fish for a lunchtime barbecue. His fellow fishers were tugging on a certain type of cigarette with its oh-so-familiar scent. Don't worry, be happy. They certainly were. Nature had provided them with all their needs, and they didn't need much. There are worse mantras to live by.
And it's back to this country, because Jane is going to read the letter from Westminster.
And the letter from Westminster this week is from Flick Drummond. I'm a big fan of plans for a new £900 million hospital at Junction 7 of the M3 that will offer state-of-the-art expert healthcare for Winchester and much of the Meon Valley. It must be at that location the preferred option and not in Basingstoke, and this is something I'm making the case for. The fact is, both the RHCH and to some extent the North Hampshire Hospital are not fit for purpose. Gone are the days when small or medium-sized towns or cities could have a district general hospital able to offer good care in all disciplines. The sheer complexity of what can be done today needs purpose-built centres of excellence able to treat people with the best equipment in the best surroundings. This is how modern medical services should be delivered. I think there is certainly a case for this to be better explained by the NHS and politicians. I met two consultants at the weekend who are desperate for leadership on this issue, and I am more than happy to give it. They too feel what we have now is not good enough, and that the government investing so much money in a brand new hospital is a once-in-a-generation opportunity to be grasped. This new hospital will have single en-suite rooms for all patients. I watched an elderly relative die at RHCH in a ward of six, many of them young men with broken bones who had to listen. There was just a curtain, nothing else. It took 7 hours for him to die. That situation was not the fault of the staff. It was the fault of an outdated building. It was awful. And the issue of A&E moving from RHCH is not the problem some want to make it. Much of its work is minor injuries, and that will stay. I can say now that those who have had a stroke or heart attack should be treated at either Southampton or Basingstoke. It's a case of making sure the best care is available for everyone, not a case of what is convenient location for some. And talking of location, unless you're lucky enough to live within a few minutes' walk of the RHCH or on a bus route, then there is a little convenient about it. Most people need to give themselves 30 minutes extra to try and find a parking space. Even those coming from parts of the Meon Valley would be at Junction 7 in the same space of time they must allocate to find somewhere to park at the RHCH, and without having the stress of having to do so. Of course, the new hospital will have public transport links and ample parking. This is all about keeping people alive and having expert care readily available. A new hospital will attract more staff too, who will want to work somewhere purpose-built. The RHCH is a huge part of Winchester. I understand that. It has a future in the NHS, but it is not fit to deliver 21st century medicine in many cases. Only a new hospital can deliver the health care we need and deserve. There is a lot of unhelpful talk of RHCH being downgraded and services will leave. This fails to grasp the reality that it must be downgraded and services must leave if we are to have a better healthcare overall. And that was from Flick Crum and MP for Meon Valley.
Time for editorial comment, so over to you, Heather.
Thank you. The future of the Winchester Hospital. We have been reporting on the future of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital for years. Now we have clarity. Managers want to press on with proposals to close the A&D unit, downgrade maternity in favour of a new hospital in or near Basingstoke. A public consultation will be launched, but in truth the decision has been made. Services will leave the RHCH even if there will be a refurbishment. In June 2020, this column wrote, "The NHS is attempting to reconcile forces that often pull in different directions. We have a fine hospital, but senior clinicians have been pointing out for years that there are not the finances to adequately staff all the specialisms that the NHS embraces. Nothing has changed. The NHS works wonders on the money that it has available. It would appear that the British public does not want to pay more in taxes that would enable the NHS to carry on operating in the way it does. If the public wants to keep the RHCH as it is, then they need to say so now and loudly. The danger is that the removal of services will accelerate, and in a few decades the RHCH will be a glorified cottage hospital. Maybe it will no longer exist, as the value of the land it sits upon is colossal."
It's time to look at lighting up time, and the days are still getting shorter, I'm afraid. So on Friday the 8th of December, lighting up time ends at 7:55 a.m. and begins at 3:59 p.m. Whereas on Wednesday the 13th of December, it ends at 8 a.m. and begins at 3:58 p.m. No, it's not, because what I'm going to say, we're now going to do items of general news. So we're going to over to you right now.
A TV star backed sacked doctor who treated her. A TV star and charity founder has said the system is corrupt for NHS whistleblowers following a sacked Winchester doctor's decision to ditch legal proceedings. Broadchurch actor Sarah Parrish presented a £2,000 cheque to maternity consultant and obstetrician Martin Pittman, raised by his supporting Facebook group, at a celebration at Winchester Rugby Club. Ms. Parrish thanked her former consultant for treating her and her babies. It led to her and partner James Murray creating the Murray Parish Trust to support the work of Southampton Children's Hospital. The senior obstetrician decided to drop an unfair dismissal claim 1 month after losing a case against Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, bosses at Southampton Magistrates Court. The Trust has maintained that his dismissal was down to an irretrievable breakdown in relations and had nothing to do with him whistleblowing. The Trust says staff are actively encouraged to speak up when they have concerns. Despite the Employment Tribunal unanimously dismissing the Winchester doctor's case, Ms. Parrish said there is no way that he did anything wrong. Ms. Parrish, 55, said, "I know he is a real fighter, an incredibly clever man, so he must have thought it through to an inch of its life. The tribunal system is corrupt, there is no doubt, and because of that, there is no point. It would have been terrible for his mental health to carry on, but we certainly haven't heard the last of him." Mr. Pittman was the actor's consultant for both her pregnancies at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. First was in 2007 with Ella Jane. She was born with a congenital heart defect after emergency cesarean section and died at just 8 months old. Ms. Parrish was pregnant again at 41 and was coming up to 34 weeks while working abroad when she felt something wasn't right. The actor believes it was thanks to Mr. Pittman that she and her now 14-year-old daughter are alive and healthy. Ms. Parrish was among many friends and family who gathered at Winchester Rugby Club on Saturday, November 25th, to show their support for Mr. Pittman. The event raised around £300 for the Murray Parish Trust. And there are pictures, nice pictures of Sarah Parrish talking to the people, and a nice picture of Martin Pittman and Linda Emptage, founder of the Friends of Martin Pittman.
And here we have glass slippers and tight pants. Cinderella brings laughs. Oh, yes, it has. The festive season really has begun in Winchester, as this year's Panto is in full swing. Cinderella, produced by arts and the education charity Play to the Crowd, is running at the Theatre Royal in Drury Street until Monday, January the 1st. And the show really is packed full of laughs, corny gags and wholesome family fun. The great thing about the Theatre Royal Panto is that all the actors are genuinely good at what they do. There are no washed-up soap stars here. The show is genuinely funny, the performance is great, and the scenes and costumes are bright and brilliant. If you are looking for a way to celebrate Christmas with your family, then you can't go far wrong with the Theatre Royal Panto. It's great for all ages, and everybody is guaranteed to leave with a smile on their face and a few funny memories. Buttons in his silver pants for me, to keep them chuckling into 2024. Cinderella will be at the Theatre Royal Winchester until Monday, January the 1st. And this is included with a delightful-looking photo of, I think it must be near the end of the pantomime somehow, because there are a group of young ladies at the back with red and white striped tights peering through heart-shaped balloons with beams and what looks like a very excited, probably Cinderella in a beautiful dress and beaming, a modern dress rather than an old-fashioned one, at a very attractive young man who's beaming back at her as well.
Demonstration outside Crown Court on jurors' rights. A demonstration took place outside Winchester Crown Court by Defend Our Juries. The group, which holds demonstrations nationally, is highlighting the rights of jurors. 8 protesters sat outside Winchester Crown Court for a silent protest. Group spokesman Steve Masters said, "We're here to highlight the fact of the absolute right of jurors to acquit on matters of conscience. Defendants are being prevented from telling juries the reasons for why they are in court." A placard Mr. Masters was holding stated, "Jurors have an absolute right to acquit a defendant according to their conscience." The group's website says, Juries are widely accepted to be the safeguard we all have against the tyrannical abuse of power by politicians, ministers, and those in positions of authority in our courts. But following a pattern of jury acquittals of those exposing government dishonesty and corporate greed through direct action, judges in United Kingdom courtrooms are denying both defendants and jurors their rights by restricting what defendants can say in their trials and by limiting what jurors are allowed to hear. People have been sent to prison just for using the words climate change and fuel poverty in court, and banned from explaining their motivations to the jury. The Ministry of Justice has been contacted for a comment.
Service of welcome to greet the new bishop. Plans have been revealed for the service of welcome for the new Bishop of Winchester. The Right Reverend Philip Mounstephen was announced as the new bishop in July and would officially start in January. Bishop Philip will serve as the 98th Bishop of Winchester Diocese, which covers 255 parishes across most of Hampshire, parts of Dorset and the Isle of Wight and the Channel Islands. His service of welcome will be held at Winchester Cathedral on Saturday, January the 13th. The service will begin at the ancient Church of St Lawrence in the city centre, where he will make his oaths and declarations. He'll then be met in the square by the Mayor of Winchester, the Chief Executive of Winchester City Council, the Roman Catholic Bishop of Portsmouth, and the head teacher and a pupil representative from the Bishop of Winchester Academy in Bournemouth. Together they will process slowly and prayerfully to Winchester Cathedral. According to tradition, Bishop Philip will then knock on the west doors of the cathedral and be greeted by a child who asks the question, "Why have you been sent to us?" To which he replies, "I come as one sent as bishop to serve you." The involvement of children will be central to the proceedings, including performances from school choirs and presenting of the crozier, the hooked staff, by a child. Other symbolic ceremonial acts during the service would include installing of the bishop into his cathedra, the throne, anointing the new bishop with holy oil, and a final act of blessing which takes place outside the cathedral when the bishop will pray for the city of Winchester and the whole diocese. Bishop Philip will also preach the sermon, his first public address, and an opportunity to express his hopes and priorities. Speaking earlier this year, Bishop Philip said, "Being a bishop is all about serving other people, and it's a great honour to be called to be Bishop of Winchester. It's a very ancient role within the church and the life of the county, and I feel highly privileged to be asked to do it. The biggest challenge we face is also our biggest opportunity, and it's how can we best love and serve the people of Hampshire, Bournemouth and Christchurch, and all the places that form the Diocese of Winchester. The service is a ticketed event, but all the proceedings, including the procession from St Lawrence Church, can be watched on the Cathedral live stream channel or in person in the outer close."
Amazing gift of home after MP's intervention. A couple who found themselves living in a caravan following illness and financial worries were visited by Meon Valley's MP in their new Winchester home after the politician helped them to secure it. Sue and Wayne Gorrit were forced to sell their Bishop's Waltham house in July because Sue, 63, who is registered blind and suffers from early onset dementia, cannot work, and Wayne, 65, is her carer. After the sale, they were only able to afford to live in a caravan that they had to move every 28 days due to site rules. The couple moved between Wickham and Winchester with friends' help while on the housing waiting list, but were running out of money. They contacted Flick Drummond and her team, who persuaded Winchester City Council to pay the last site fees and find them a house. The couple moved into their home in Stanmore on November the 1st, just as the cold weather set in, and invited the MP to visit. Mrs. Gorrit, a former marketing consultant, said she spent months trying to explain her health issues to her housing officer to no avail until Miss Drummond intervened. She said, Flick's kindness, compassion and determination to assist us in our greatest time of need is something that we have never encountered before and for which we will be eternally grateful. I can tell you we finally feel like we have come home. We feel secure and safe. We haven't felt like that for such a long time. That's an amazing gift to give anyone, and we can never thank her enough. Miss Drummond added, I'm delighted this is a happy ending for Sue and Wayne after a very tough few months. I was able to ensure senior housing officers at the council understood Sue's severe health needs and the inappropriateness of them remaining in the caravan as winter drew nearer. I'm pleased the council listened and acted, and this couple have a home to live in where Sue can be cared for and treated. It was a pleasure to be invited by them to see their new home. It is a new start for them, and one I was happy to assist with. I wish them the very best, and they have said I can always pop in for a cuppa. The couple also look after 5 rescue dogs from across the world who are disabled after accidents or mistreatment. They too now have a home. And this is accompanied by a photo of a very happy-looking couple with Wayne with his arms around Sue outside their new home with Flick Drummond.
Thousands of trees to be planted in National Park. More than 23,000 trees are being planted this winter across the South Downs National Park in an attempt to help wildlife flourish. Scores of trees will be planted at 20 new sites across Hampshire and Sussex. In the Winchester area, they include Compton, Twyford, Alresford and Chilcombe. It will be a step forward for the Trees for the Downs campaign as it nears its target of planting 100,000 trees across the region. The initiative was launched 4 years ago, and the new planting phase will mean more than 60,000 new trees across 114 different sites. The tree planting will restore those lost to pests and diseases, including ash dieback and Dutch elm disease, as well as create new habitat for wildlife and amenity for local communities. The trees are a mixture of disease-resistant elms and native species such as oak and black poplar. The planting's been made possible by donations from the public and businesses to the South Downs National Park Trust, the official independent charity for the National Park. A boost came from the American Express Foundation's grant to National Parks UK, part of which went to Trees for the Downs and meant 5,000 trees could be planted. Nick Heisman, a countryside and policy manager for the National Park, said, "By the end of this winter, we'll have planted over 60,000 trees as part of the Trees for the Downs, and it's something we can all be proud of. Trees for the Downs is a key part of the National Park's inspiring Renature Drive, which is seeking to create thousands of hectares of new wildlife havens to help nature bounce back and so it continues to go from strength to strength." Councillor Chris Corcoran from Twyford Parish Council said, "When a group of Twyford residents signed up to support tree planting in the village Twyford When a group of Twyford residents signed up to support tree planting in the village, Twyford Parish Council stepped forward to help. The Trees for the Downs initiative has been the perfect partner." And the 4 sites mentioned in that article are at Compton, Compton County Farm Estate, at Twyford, the Queen's Clump and Avenue, at Alresford, it's Manor Farm, and at Chilcombe, it's Chilcombe Stud. And the list also includes, as we've had so much about Jane Austen, Chawton, and the Mingle Down Plantation.
Theatres Showcase. More than 40 independent makers and designers will be showcasing their work at a theatre's annual Christmas market. The Makers Market is returning to the Nutshell Theatre in King's Walk on Saturday, December the 9th and Sunday, December the 10th. The cafe and bar will be open, and there'll be live music by by Hannah Castleman and Encore Youth Theatre on Sunday. Visitors will be able to buy unique handmade products, meet local creatives and learn about crafts such as needle felt, ceramics, botanical art, glassware, lino prints and wildlife portraits. The event is free and open, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on both days. Harriet Morris, Executive Director at The Nutshell, said the Maker's Market is an alternative offering by the people who live and work in Winchester. The Cathedral Market is beautiful, but this is proper local businesses. The Antiques Market was a nostalgic thing here, which is why we wanted to bring the Maker's Market in. Noel Jones, Artistic Director, said it's about supporting local businesses at this time of year. Everybody is equal and welcome here. We really wanted to celebrate all the wonderful makers and designers in Winchester.
And Deal secures future of local DAB radio stations. The future of DAB radio stations in Winchester and Basingstoke has been secured after they were taken over by local groups. UK DAB Networks, operator of the Digital Audio Broadcasting DAB Networks, had entered voluntary liquidation in October due to the business no longer being viable. Under the leadership of Osman Senshadoun from Outreach Radio, two new local consortia were formed to develop new business plans with the hope that the liquidator would transfer the licences to the group. On Wednesday, November the 22nd, it was confirmed by Ofcom that the two new consortia had successfully taken over the DAB licences for Winchester and Basingstoke. However, the DAB services are temporarily off-air pending urgent re-engineering works. Reacting to the news, Nigel Dallard, Winchester Radio Trustee, said, "It is disheartening that the DAB network has been switched off. However, with the licence having been transferred by Ofcom to the consortium of local not-for-profit radio stations, including Winchester Radio, we look forward to being back on DAB in the coming weeks after the necessary engineering work and final approval by Ofcom. In the meantime, listeners can continue to tune in to Winchester Radio on 94.7 FM and online." Mr. Senshadoun from Chandler's Ford said, "We are very relieved and extremely fortunate to have been able to take on these DAB licences. It's a lifeline that will enable us to ensure future continuity of service to all radio stations affected by the unfortunate demise of UK DAB networks. Now begin some major re-engineering works that will allow us to operate these services in a financially sustainable manner, which in turn will offer a greater level of protection to our valuable local radio services, many of which are charities, social enterprises and not-for-profit organisations. The engineering work has to begin immediately, as we've now taken on these licences, but it's our firm intention to restore the radio services back to air as soon as possible. With Ofcom's continued guidance and support, and in the hope that our new technical plans are accepted and signed off as soon as possible, we are certain that we can keep downtime to a minimum. The new consortia includes Basingstoke Community Radio, Hospital Radio Basingstoke, Outreach Radio, Voice FM, Winchester Radio and Winchester Today.
Abuse images man kicked out of police. A Winchester police constable has avoided being sent to prison after he downloaded child abuse images of youngsters as young as 1 year old onto his phone. Jed Osmond, aged 28, of Binstead Road, Kingsbarton, pleaded guilty at Winchester Crown Court to possessing 42 Category A images, 65 Category B photos and 23 Category C. The court heard that police attended his home after receiving information, and a search of his Samsung mobile phone found the images in cache folders. They featured children aged between 1 and 6. Judge Adam Feast, KC, sentenced him to 13 months in prison, suspended for 18 months. He was also ordered to carry out 150 hours of unpaid work, 35 rehabilitation days, and the judge ordered the destruction of his phone. The court heard that by entering guilty pleas, Osmond would be immediately dismissed from his job as a police officer. Judge Feast told Osmond, who was a probationary officer when he viewed the images between September 2020 and a year later, that he was not sending him to prison because he had shown remorse and because of the state of the prison population. He said, "You downloaded images of children being raped and sexually abused because that's what these images are. You are now 28. You were of good character, which is something you will no longer be able to claim. And through your own fault, you have lost your employment. That I do not regard as punishment because you brought it upon yourself." He added, "Bearing in mind the prospects of rehabilitation, I can mark these offences with a suspended sentence. I take into account the remorse you have shown, the mitigation I have heard, and the state of the prison population. The fact that you were a probationary police officer at the time, I do take as an aggravating feature." Deputy Chief Constable Sam Dorea of Hampshire Constabulary said Jed Osmond was caught in possession of more than 100 indecent images of children. "Not only is this a very serious criminal offence, it is also morally reprehensible. This was a deliberate act, and one he waited until late in the court process to admit. Our main duty as police officers is to protect the public, in particular the most vulnerable and children." At an accelerated misconduct hearing last month, Osmond was dismissed from the force.
Residents criticise plans to close A&E. Which the residents have criticised plans to close the A&E department at Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The proposed closure is part of the plans for a new specialist acute hospital on the edge of Basingstoke, using more than £800 million in government funding. Under the plans, which were revealed on Thursday, the RHCH would be refurbished and a 24/7 urgent treatment centre opened. Although the current A&E would close, many services will be retained, including the same-day emergency care, a planned surgery centre, Florence Portal House birthing unit, and outpatients. The news of the plans has been criticised by members of the public in Winchester. Sam Gamester, 49, said, "I'm against it being closed. I think the city the size of Winchester needs an A&E. 84-year-old Anita Monk said that while it would not affect her very much, scrapping the A&E would be appalling for the younger generation. She continued, "I'd rather have the facilities here. Basingstoke is rather far for people who live here to get to." Frank Garrett, 66, said, "I don't like that it won't be nearby. I'm in favour of it staying in Winchester." And Debbie Wood, 61, said, "I think it is awful. People who don't have transport, how are they going to get to Basingstoke?" 19-year-old. Sorry. Frank Garnett said, "I don't like that it won't be nearby. I'm in favour of it staying in Winchester." Debbie Wood said, "I think it's awful. People who don't have transport, how are they going to get to Basingstoke?" 19-year-old Daniel Boyce said, "I've gone to the A&E department at the hospital many times, and everyone needs an A&E. The Basingstoke Hospital would be too far away for most people, and the A&E here is right in the middle of the city, so almost everyone can reach it." Lynn Walker, 68, said, "Everyone needs that service here. I think there are so many people who want it to stay."
And second happiest place to live. Winchester has been ranked as the second happiest place to live in Great Britain for 2023, according to property sales website Rightmove. The city featured just behind Richmond upon Thames in the list and was Hampshire's only representative in the top 20. Rightmove's 12th annual Happy at Home Index asks residents how they feel about their area and was completed this year by more than 26,000 people. The study found that feeling a sense of pride, belonging and community is most likely to contribute to feeling happy to live in the area, more so than having access to things like public transport, schools and job opportunities. Winchester's average asking price for a house during 2023 was £571,613, and the average asking rent per calendar month was 2,097p, Rightmove reported. Tim Bannister, Rightmove's property expert, said, "Searching for new areas outside of the city that are still commutable on office days and looking for cheaper properties that are in need of renovation are just some of the actions we've seen determined movers make this year. The results of this year's study highlights that residents continue to value living near green spaces and natural beauty features that became all the more important during the pandemic."
Santas paint the town red. There are three photographs of very jolly Santas, actually a huge variety of individuals running triumphantly into the Broadway as the snow falls on them. Many of them have actually pulled their beards down and are wearing them round their necks rather than on their chins, I presume so they can keep running and have plenty of breath. Winchester city centre was painted red as jolly Santas flooded the streets for the annual Santa Fun Run, a 5-kilometre run fundraising event organised by Naomi House and Jack's Place, local hospices for children and young adults. The epic festive spectacle took place on Sunday, December the 3rd, as hundreds of runners wore Santa suits to spread holiday cheer while raising funds. The event kicked off with a lively Zumba warm-up in the morning, just before 9 o'clock, before Santas of all ages then embarked on a scenic route through the heart of the city. The Broadway was transformed into a festive zone, closed to traffic from 6 in the morning till 12 noon to make sure that all the runners were safe. As the Santas approached the finish line outside the Guildhall, the air was filled with a flurry of artificial snow. Naomi House and Jack's Place provide expert hospice care for children and young adults with complex needs.
And here's another charity run. Race in memory of ultra-runner Broly raises £5,000. And there's a picture of three runners, all smiling cheerfully as they run on a path through the woods. A race in memory of an ultra-runner and triathlete in the Meon Valley raised £5,000 for three charities. The fifth edition of Roly's Run, in memory of Rich Roly Walklate, who died in 2018, was held on Sunday, November the 19th. The race raised around £5,000 for three causes, supporting Papworth Hospital Charity, Help for Heroes and UK Sepsis Trust. Rich's sister, Anna Walklate, said, "As we round off our fifth Roly's Run, I'd like to thank each and every runner, walker, volunteer, baker, supporter and anyone else who makes our small event possible. It is a day that is very tough for us, but also rewarding, as we get to remember Rich and to share it with such an incredible group of people. For me, it feels like this event brings out the Rich in people. Endless drive, lashings of enthusiasm, a sense of fun and limitless support for others. I love meeting all the people who embrace the same aspects of life that Rich did. But each time, I've met people who touched my heart in an extra special way, and this year was no exception."
And the Lib Dems criticise lack of dentists. According to the NHS Find a Dentist service, just one dentist surgery is accepting new NHS patients in Winchester. Research conducted by Winchester Liberal Democrats reveals that except Oliver's Battery Dental Surgery, the closest NHS dentist services are Eastleigh or Portsmouth. The Lib Dems are calling on the government to publish a dental recovery plan. Winchester Lib Dem election candidate Danny Chambers said, "Patients in the South Downs would need to travel over 10 miles to get to Eastleigh or Portsmouth to get an appointment. That journey is practically impossible by public transport and inconvenient for those with a car. I meet people in Winchester and the Meon Valley every week who are stuck on NHS waiting lists, unable to get the treatment they deserve." A Hampshire Integrated Care Board, ICB, spokesman said, We are aware of the issues and frustrations in Winchester where patients cannot always access an NHS dentist. Unfortunately, these are issues that are seen across Hampshire and indeed the country, as we face challenges in recruiting NHS dentists whilst working within the parameters of a national contract. The NHS ICB took over the responsibility for dentistry this year and are working hard to secure more NHS contracts for dentistry across Hampshire to increase the availability of NHS dentist appointments closer to where patients live.
There is a saying, this is entitled Players Club Together in Above Par Comedy. There's a saying that golf is the best way to spoil a nice walk. I'm not much of a golfer, so I don't know if the saying is true. But I think if I met the characters in Peter Gordon's Par for the Course, performed masterfully by the Cheriton Players from November the 29th to December the 2nd, I'd probably hang up my theoretical clubs for good. Set at the fictional Seven Lakes Golf Club, Par for the Course follows six club members during Captain's Day. As secrets are revealed and poor communication takes place, the swelling egos and clashing personalities lead to a crashing end. To start things off, the show itself looked fantastic. While the set's somewhat minimally, essentially the patio outside the clubhouse, as well as the putting green, the actual production design itself was superb, especially when you think how small the space is in the Cheriton Village Hall. The players themselves were incredibly well cast. Standouts include Mike Caunter as Barry West, who managed to create a character so equally pleasant and put upon that I had to fight the urge to get up and hug him. Meanwhile, David Craddock expertly portrayed club secretary and busybody Simon Weaver, leading to a fantastic performance as he explored the character's eccentricities. Bernadette Lomas shone as Tiffany Jennings, an air-headed young woman hoping to make it as an air stewardess, in a performance that appeared to be channeling the best parts of Catherine Tate's work. The other cast members, Glyn Williams as conniving habitual liar, exaggerator, Nick Armitage, and Jane Richards, a former Talking Magazine volunteer with us, as the dominant Frank Jeffries, and Helena Gom as Simon's caustic and clever wife Laura, also all deserve applause and praise. The play itself was full of amazing jokes, leading to some incredible punchlines. Arguments about golf clubs, improperly prepared sausages, the ailing health of one's poor mother, and an ongoing dispute over where a hedge is planted, all escalate and build, making it a real delight as the storylines merge and overlap. The show was not without faults, mostly that some of the humour felt a little bit dated, but that's something the company itself can't change. Overall, it was incredible fun, and I can't stress how excellent the cast was. There were times I forgot that I wasn't watching professionals. As the nights get longer and the weather gets colder, it's nice to be able to enter a world of endless warm days and pleasant evenings. And Par for the Course offers all of that. Just don't eat the sausages.
Learning charities rise in members. A Winchester charity which helps adults with learning disabilities celebrated a successful year at its AGM. Former Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Patrick Cunningham, joined a panel at the Winchester Go LD AGM Go For It show. Members and trustees joined Councillor Cunningham to answer questions on Winchester and the charity's activities. Winchester Go LD aims to enable adults with learning disabilities to live life to the full with the choices and independence that they want. James Gurrier, co-chair of the trustees, thanked the charity's volunteers, staff and supporters. Betty Chadwick, CEO, said the ongoing cost of living crisis and the significant challenges facing local services to meet the most basic levels of support are all directly impacting our members' lives. Winchester Go LD has continued to successfully grow and develop with standout initiatives like our Travel with Confidence project and the day-to-day pastoral care and adequacy that our team provides. We provide information and signposting, identifying needs and speaking out for members' interests. We also deliver activities to build skills and promote a healthy lifestyle. We give our members a voice, particularly when confronted with difficult choices and decisions involving adult social care, NHS health teams, families and support providers. The charity has seen a 16.5% increase in active membership, reflecting a steady year-on-year trend in growth. In the last 3 years, membership has expanded by 53%.
And here we have Meet Zoo's cutest pumpkin in the patch. Marwell Zoo has welcomed a cute new member to its family. Pumpkin, a Banteng calf who was born on October the 31st, is the newest member of the herd. In a statement, Marwell Zoo said, "We're delighted to welcome a new addition to our endangered Banteng herd, and she is the cutest pumpkin in the patch." The new calf, born to mother Dewey and father Henke on Halloween, is sister Tereya, who was born at Marwell in November 2022. Keepers chose to name her Pumpkin to reflect her birth date on the spookiest day of the year, October the 31st. Alex Cam, assistant keeper, said, "Pumpkin and Mum Dewey are doing well and Dewey is very attentive to her calf. Pumpkin is mixing in well with the rest of the herd and can often be seen enjoying their outside space when the weather is nice." The youngster has been seen frolicking with older members of the herd when they're out in the paddock and keeping up with her sibling, despite being the smallest by a considerable stretch. Banteng are one of the rarest cattle species in the world and would have historically been found in Asia from southern China to northeast India, mainland Asia, peninsular Malaysia and nearby islands. The number continues to decrease as a result of hunting and habitat loss. It is thought there are around 8,000 of these animals left in the wild. And this is, of course, accompanied by a delightful photo of a little bouncy pumpkin, the Banteng calf, with her tail in the air and looking very happy to be part of the herd.
Refugee plan backed. The leader of the opposition has thrown her support behind plans to refurbish a city centre property as temporary housing for Ukrainian and Afghan refugees. Winchester City Council triggered £610,000 to regenerate 59 Colebrook Street, which has been empty for 2 years. After the plan was given the backing of the Cabinet, the full Council unanimously supported it on Thursday, November the 30th. To fund the work, Hampshire County Council provided £250,000, the Local Authority Housing Fund £206,000 and £154,000 came from borrowing. Leader of the City Council's Conservative group, Councillor Caroline Howell, said, "Oh, it's admirable that we want to help our Ukrainian and Afghan guests. Many of them want to stay, and this is a great chance for us, and I hope we can support this really positive move." Councillor Chris Westwood, Cabinet Member for Housing, said this will provide accommodation for people on various government resettlement schemes. It's in a good central location with access to training and near all transport links. It's expected the council's use for this property would be with predominantly Ukrainians. Winchester currently has 62 single Ukrainians with hosts. The council's resettlement team would continue to support them while they lived in this house, and it would be of real value in the long term. The council unanimously agreed to support the scheme.
Vision to link cultural sites. New plans for investing in Winchester are on the horizon as Hampshire Cultural Trust could take over the running of the Great Hall. The plans moved a step forward following a decision by Councillor Rob Humby, the leader of the County Council, on November the 30th, paving the way for the Council and the Trust to work together on detailed proposals before a final decision is made. The Cultural Trust's ambition is to create a joined-up Winchester Castle visitor experience, reconnecting the Great Hall to both the ruined keep and the city's only surviving medieval gateway, the West Gate, through new interpretation. The Great Hall is home to King Arthur's Round Table. Councillor Humby said, "We enjoy a very positive partnership with Hampshire Cultural Trust, who have an established good track record in managing and operating a number of our visitor attractions, such as the Milestones Museum in Basingstoke and the Ark in Winchester." Undoubtedly, the Great Hall is one of the most important heritage venues in England, and I can think of no better custodian than the Hampshire Cultural Trust, who I'm confident would maximise the venue's potential and increase visitor numbers. Paul Sapwell, Chief Executive of Hampshire Cultural Trust, said, "This is an incredibly exciting time. We're thrilled that Hampshire County Council has made the first step in a decision to transfer one of Winchester's most iconic and historic buildings to Hampshire Cultural Trust to run. Our track record in operating public buildings speaks for itself, not only through our management of two city centre museums, the Westgate Museum and the City Museum, but also through the Ark, which we took on in 2022, revitalising it as a space for the whole community. We pride ourselves on putting the customer experience at the heart of what we do, on our creativity and innovation. Nowhere is this more in evidence than at our newest visitor attraction, 878 AD, where we have used live performance and groundbreaking technology to create something that is unique, not just in Winchester, but in the UK. It is this experience and expertise that we will be bringing to our vision for the Great Hall. Following the decision in principle, the County Council will now work closely with the Trust on the details of the transfer. Subject to agreement being reached, it is anticipated that a transfer could take place in early 2024.
Warning issued to dog owners. A warning has been issued to dog owners after Alabama Rot was reported in Hampshire. People across the county are being asked to be aware of the disease while walking their dogs. The rare disease attacks the kidneys of dogs and can affect all breeds, ages and weights. There have been 292 confirmed cases since the illness was discovered in the UK in 2012. In a post on Facebook, insurance company NFU Mutual Winchester and Wickham said that the disease is suspected to be in Chawton Woods near Alton. The post says, "If you're concerned that your dog may be suffering, we urge that you contact your vet immediately for further advice." Danny Chambers, a vet and Liberal Democrats parliamentary candidate for Winchester, told the Chronicle, "Signs of Alabama rot include skin swellings, lesions and sores, particularly on the legs, and a reduction in appetite. Spotting the signs early so vets can start intensive treatment gives the highest chances of success in treating the disease. However, it is important to remember that it's an extremely rare disease. Owners should be mindful and observant, but not let it stop them from enjoying time with their dog outdoors."
Choir to join star tenors. A choir from a local operatic society is performing with Tenors Unlimited at the Theatre Royal. Tenors Unlimited will be performing their Christmas show on Tuesday, December the 12th at 7:30 with a choir from Winchester Musicals and Opera Society. This is part of Tenors Unlimited's new United Kingdom tour as they enter a new era as a duo, Jem Sharples and Paul Martin. In this show, Tenors Unlimited will be singing popular classical hits as well as songs written by the group themselves and Christmas favourites.
Craft and Crust for sale. General release tickets are now available for the new Craft and Crust Festival. The festival will be coming to Winchester for the first time on Saturday, April the 13th. The event will see craft stalls, pies, pizza, street food and live music taking over the Guildhall. The food and drink event will offer 25 craft beers, craft gin and farmhouse ciders. The first brewery to be featured at the event has also been confirmed, with event organisers announcing that the Rural Brewing Company will be selling its products. Further breweries are yet to be announced. Festival goers can also expect pie-eating competitions and entertainments from tribute bands and local artists. The event will have an afternoon session running from midday to 5 p.m. and an evening session from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. Tom Cullen, marketing manager for the Craft and Crust Festival, said the demand for pre-sale tickets was bigger than ever before, and we expect general sale to sell just as quickly. This is a huge feel-good event, full of epic entertainment, including pie-eating competitions, live music, and a wide range of food and drink.
Includes the extracts for the 8th of December 2023. Thank you to our editors for choosing the extracts, and thank you to our memory stick preparation, copying and dispatch teams. And thanks to today's readers, of course, Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening, and I hope you stay safe and well in the week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye.